Welcome, everyone. And welcome to this space. Just checking that the sound is clear and loud enough. Yeah, okay. And no, I'm concerned that there might be some rubbing of the mic against my shirt, so just checking that there's no interference there. Great. Yeah, so welcome to this this session of the online Dharma Hall. Whatever time zone you're in, whatever state of body, heart, and mind you're in, whatever the conditions within you and around you at the moment, just really welcoming you and also inviting you to welcome yourself into the space. However and wherever you are in the moment. And to also extend that welcome to each other, if you wish. A sense of this community coming together, gathering together to practice and to reflect, to explore the teachings and practices of Dharma. Teachings and practices that free us and free the world, that bring compassion and wisdom to the full forefront of our hearts and minds and forefronts of this world that we share. And I'm really welcoming you, also myself, and for those who may not know me, my name is Zohar. I'm a teacher at Gaia House and one of the facilitators of these online Dharma Hall sessions. And I'm, as always, feel very grateful and appreciative to be here and to have this chance to come together with others. And I'd like to invite each of us to reflect a little bit on what brings us here today. And to feel, what is your intention for being here? And the other side of that, as some of you know that I've been doing recently, is to whom or to what you'd like to dedicate your practice. Yeah, so we have that possibility that you can see those two as very, very much, sometimes they can feel like the same thing, sometimes they can feel slightly different. So what's my intention? What do I wish to cultivate, to strengthen in myself, in the world, and or what would I like to dedicate this practice to, or who would I like to dedicate this practice to? And so taking a couple of moments to reflect on that, and then if you wish, you're really welcome to put it into the chat. Intention, dedication, both. Whenever you're ready, and I'll read those out loud as they come in. So connecting with Sangha and dedicating this period to all those who are suffering. To cultivate equanimity for myself. In order to be of most help to others. Yeah, beautiful. Dedication to all those who despair. Quiet determination, dedicated to all those whose human rights are attacked. To build a regular practice and to center myself before I face the world. Yes. Dedicating my practice to peace in the Middle East and especially to Palestine. Trying to turn away from the hatred in the world towards light and peace. Connecting with Sangha. And dedicating the practice for Al, Mark and family and to the earth itself. Just take a couple more moments to see if anything else comes in. But warm patience and peaceful beings. My intention is to learn about what is important and to get priorities right. And I dedicate this practice to Palestine. So yeah, thank you. Thank you everyone. And there's another one coming in. An intention to cultivate kindness and acceptance towards myself. And the dedication is to everyone working towards peace and justice in Palestine and Israel. Yeah. And we can keep that sense of intention and dedication going. So the fact that I'm no longer reading them out, they may be still coming in. To the chat, they may still be very much coming into your hearts and minds and resonating within you, both your own intentions, dedications, and what others have voiced. And just, yeah, just really letting them be part of the space. It's a very grounding, yeah, and opening aspect of practice. To have that sense of the intentionality and of the dedication with which we come to our practice and with which our community is coming to the practice. Mm-hmm. So we can feel like, oh, my intentions and dedications are completely different, or they echo with very much what others have said, and there's space for all of that. Yeah. So as a community, we come together, yeah, with both our particularities and our commonalities. Yeah. What kind of the particularities of our condition, particularities of our conditions and our hearts and minds, and then also the shared aspect of them. So let's take this into a practice together. We'll take about half an hour to practice, and I'll guide, but I'll also really make an intention to leave silence as well for you, to kind of have time to settle and to explore your own way of being with the guidance that I'll be suggesting. So, yeah, let's settle into the practice. And that begins with settling into your posture, which begins with checking in with your body, heart and mind. Mm-hmm. Saying, what's the appropriate posture for the body, heart and mind right now? And then settling into that posture. You may already be in a posture and still checking in, still taking time to sense the appropriateness. And then to settle into the posture, settle into the body. Taking the time to make any adjustments that may be needed. so that the body is as supported, stable, and steady as possible. As we're doing so, inviting the awareness into the body, letting it come into the body, in particular, can invite the awareness to come more deeply into the body, perhaps using the sensations of contact between the body and the seat. Body and the ground, the body and the mat, or mattress if we're reclining. Feeling into those sensations of contact. Resting into the immediacy of these sensations of contact, the body and that which supports the body. And gradually inviting from that groundedness in the contact to allow the awareness to open, to expand, perhaps to the whole base of the body, feeling that base of support. So if you're in a sitting position, it will be the whole lower part of the body. Same if you're standing. If you're reclining, it could be the whole back of the body or side of the body. Whatever serving as the base for the whole body right now. Kind of noticing both the grounding in those sensations of contact, but generally the sense of the base, foundation. And we're also noticing the kind of opening as we open the awareness to a wider area or a wider field. Images are helpful for you. You can have a sense of the base of a mountain or the rootedness of a tree. As the kind of what this base of the body means or feels like. And then checking if this is enough of a opening of awareness. We may find that's wide enough, or if we want to expand the awareness further to the whole body. Exploring a little bit for yourself what allows you to still stay grounded as well as open. Again, imagery may be helpful, sense of the whole mountain or the whole tree opening out into the world. Just like there's the whole body. It's rooted in the contact sensations and in the base of the body, but opening out to more of the body. Checking for yourself how wide an expansion is helpful. Just contact sensations, base of the body or whole of the body. And keeping that as the space that you'll be practicing with and within through this practice. Space of awareness, as wide as is helpful, between the contact sensations and the whole body, finding your particular sweet spot of awareness. Resting into that and with that. And it may be that this is enough of an anchor of attention, this sense of exploring the groundedness and openness. And you can also, if it's helpful, include a more particular anchor, maybe something you're used to. It might be the breath. As it moves in and out of the body, or it may be sound, or it may be metta for those who know it, and maybe another anchor that you want to incorporate. Staying grounded in the body as you do so, noticing, opening to the impact, the flow of the particular anchor through the space of the body. Whatever the anchor is that you have chosen for this time of practice, including just the body, as we were doing. Body, breath, sound, or metta, one anchor. present within the space of awareness in the body. So let's explore this for a while in silence. Gently noticing what you notice. It's unfolding an experience right now. Remember, this practice is an act of kindness, of care, of non-harming towards yourself, towards the world. From that, continuing this moment-to-moment responsiveness of practice, rooted in the body, in the awareness in the body, receiving in awareness, groundedness and the spaciousness of the body field. If you've chosen a particular anchor, that too, the breath arising and moving, flowing through the space of awareness with the sound or the metta intention. One moment at a time, opening and grounding, opening and grounding. Allowing the heart and mind to rest into awareness in the body, into the knowing of the anchor of attention, letting go of everything else for now. this moment of experience? What's unfolding? Is it possible to invite awareness to rest into the body? To rest into the base of the body and into the openness of the body space? Whatever degree is helpful for you. Groundedness, rootedness, and openness. Spaciousness. In the space of awareness in the body. Within it, if helpful, the particularities of the breath. Moving through the space of the body. Or any other anchor moving through the space of the body. Keeping that sense of spaciousness and groundedness as we practice in this way. For the last few minutes left of this practice, noticing any well-being that arises as you practice in this way, this simplicity, groundedness and openness. Allowing yourself to feel any degree of well-being, even if it's very mild. Soak that in. and be nourished by it. Also to share it out, to attune to any wish that there may be in your being, for the safety and the well-being of all beings, and to let that gently radiate out into the world as we continue to practice. May our practice together be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. May our practice together nourish the movement, the momentum, to free all beings from suffering and its causes. So gently, when you're ready, taking your time to transition from the formal practice, moving the body or opening the eyes. No sense of rush, you know, really taking your time with this. Including it in your practice. As we transition, I'm wanting to just say a few words and give some reminders around dana practice. That these sessions are offered by Gaia House and by myself freely, in the spirit of dana, spirit of free and heartful exchange. Everyone is welcome, and there is not a fee for joining, and there is an invitation if you wish to participate in supporting these sessions to exist and to continue, both through dana to Gaia House and through dana to myself. And I will put in the chat in a moment two links. So the first link is to the Gaia House support page. If you wish to offer support to Gaia House, you're really welcome to do it via that link. And the second link is for our food box project in the West Bank of Palestine, if you wish to offer Dana to me, then please support that project on my behalf. Yeah. It saves money going to pay tax if it goes directly there. And equally, if there's a different charity you wish to support, you're welcome to do that on my behalf. I trust you with that. So there are the two links in the chat, right there. And so I'd like to continue and to offer some Dharma reflections on, a theme I feel is very relevant for me, and I feel like it's relevant to all of us as human beings and as practitioners. It's actually the theme of retreat we'll be teaching this week, starting on Tuesday, here in Israel and Palestine, where I am. And the theme is Sila, Pali word that's often translated as ethics. I feel like it can be more precise, instead of trying to find a word for Sila, to kind of connect to the sense of what it means. Yeah. Care. And an alignment with non-harming. So when I was reflecting this morning about teaching this, speaking about this today, I felt like, this morning's definition of Sila is an alignment with non-harming and an embodiment of deep care in the world. And often when we speak about Sila or reflect about it, we particularly in the teachings we focus on the five precepts, which many of you may be very familiar with, and I'm just going to mention them briefly in a moment, and to say they're all practices, but also that Sila isn't just defined by these five precepts. It's not just synonymous with them. They're expressions of Sila, they're practices of Sila, and their invitations to look at particular areas of our lives where kind of Sila is a really good intention, good arenas for practicing it, for cultivating it. So, these five areas are not causing physical harm, so non-harming of life directly. Through our actions, not killing is the kind of sometimes what it's kind of spoken of in a nutshell, but it's really not causing physical harm to others. It's not taking what isn't freely offered to us. So that sense of respect and care, not harming. And when we reflect on our world, we can see how much harm comes when that is not aligned with. We take what isn't offered to us, that isn't kind of ours, we could say. There's also the area of speech, so non-harming in how we express ourselves through our words. In many, many various ways, and there's a lot of right speech, and we'll get to that, is a big, big aspect of the teachings and the practices. There's non-harming with our sexual energies. So, you can see how human beings have not changed in 2,600 years and before, and also we can reflect on these five precepts and how common they are in all spiritual traditions and religions. The same kind of areas that are pointed to us to pay attention to, because these are areas where we kind of lose touch, we get swept away, and sexual energy is one of them. So how to have respect for others. through how we express or don't express our sexuality. And the fifth area is the area of respect for our own mind and heart. So it's spoken of as non-harming, as not clouding the mind, because when we cloud the heart and mind, we engage in activities that cloud the heart and mind, then we're more likely to cause harm in these other four ways. Yeah, it's very interesting to see that relationship. Often people ask about this. So it's not, you know, it's not just about refraining, it's just seeing, you know, and then we can see how these precepts are not just rules, they're actually practices because they're in the service of compassion and wisdom. And so they have opened up the field. As I said, often when we speak about sila, it's the precepts, but you know, the precepts are really rich in themselves. But of course, it's not the specificness of these five precepts, but actually the wider area of care and of non-harming in our lives that is really, really meaningful. These are just pointers, you know. Practice around this, because this is where you'll see it, yeah? And you'll have a chance to align with your intention. And another place where sila really appears very strongly in the teachings is within the Eightfold Path. So, you know, just to put it in the context, you know, the Buddha's teachings, the core teaching, the Four Noble Truths, you know, that there is suffering within the human condition, that suffering is conditioned, it co-arises with other conditions, that there is a way of practice that can free us from some of this conditioned suffering. And that way of practicing is the Eightfold Path, and there's again eight limbs to this path, eight areas. And if this is not doesn't feel too analytical, but these eight limbs are grouped into groups of three, into three groups. Sorry, and one of these is called the sila grouping: the right or wise speech, action, and livelihood. So again, now see the importance of sila. I often say, if you don't think sila is important, it's got the most limbs. You know, it gets three. The other two, samadhi and panya, wisdom, they only get two each. Mm-hmm. So very, very, very important. And also when spoken of in that way, yeah, it's always sila, samadhi, panya. And the sila comes first. It's the foundation. For the other limbs, it's the foundation for the path. And of course the limbs, as some of you know, they're not linear. Even though they appear as a list of eight, they are constantly in relationship with each other. So this kind of sense of right or wise or liberating speech, action, and livelihood. And you know, when you say that, you think, is there anything in our lives that is not included there? Yeah. The kind of the speech, which includes our whole thinking, articulating, verbal world, the actions, yeah, how we move, how we choose, what we do in the world, our livelihood, which is both the means for our livelihood, but also I often like to think about it as the kind of the ways that we interact with the world, yeah. You know, priorities that we take and make, the impact that we have on the world. Everything that doesn't fall into action or speech, yeah, goes here in the livelihood aspect. And you know, sila is often you know, referred to both as the foundation of our practice, the basis. You know, so when we're meditating now, you know, I really emphasize this base of the body. And sila is the base of our practice life. And sometimes spoken of as the root, the foundation, what we can build on. Without that in place, you know, without that giving a priority, our practice is flimsy. You know? It's not going to root, it's not going to develop. But also I want to say, you know, that as well as being the root and the foundation, it's also where our path is leading. Yeah, our path is leading towards non-harming. It's leading towards care. It's leading towards this understanding of compassion and wisdom. So it's not just, you know, sometimes, you know, you even hear teachings that may sound like, or sometimes they might even outrightly say, you know, it's something you do. Once you get your sila in order, you forget about it. Yeah? No. Absolutely not. You know, that will come back and bite us, and not only us, but also those around us. Yeah, because sila, of course, is a relational practice. It impacts others, not only ourselves. And so it's the culmination of our path, and it needs to be an ongoing presence and exploration in our lives all the time, you know, that being part of it. You know, that sense of care, that sense of non-harming. That is the root and where we're going towards. And we can see it, you know, when we reflect on, you know, what would a mind heart be, you know, a heart mind that is freed from greed, freed from hatred, yeah, freed from delusion. Yeah, that's the definition of an awakened mind. Yeah? It's freed from greed, freed from hatred, freed from delusion. That's a mind imbued with care. It's a mind imbued with sila. Yeah? We can start to see that relationship. It's imbued with a commitment to non-harming. And I think that's kind of part of why I feel this teaching is so important and so beautiful, is that we can see, you know, it's the foundation, it's the ongoing exploration. It's also where we're going with this, you know, it's the culmination of the path. It's always relevant, and it's always something that we can apply, that we can bring in. And kind of I'm bringing that in because, you know, as the crises in our personal lives or in the world get more acute, we may feel more and more helpless. Yeah. We can feel more despair. And this practice of sila reminds us there's always something we can do. Mm-hmm. And how we hold ourselves and how we conduct ourselves and what we prioritize, that makes a difference to others. Mm-hmm. Teachings, there's this beautiful phrase of around sila that says, you know, when we practice in this way, when we prioritize non-harming, we're giving the gift of safety to the world, yeah, and to other beings. That's a beautiful, beautiful way of seeing it. We're offering, we're giving the gift of safety to others, and to the world. It really does make a difference in the world that we share, and it's something that is surprisingly palpable. You know, when you meet somebody where for whom sila is really strong, you feel it. Yeah. And it can be worth reflecting for ourselves. You know, at times when we've just met somebody, been in the presence of someone and felt at ease, yeah, felt safe, felt respected. Yeah. Ah, it's because there's a clarity that this person is practicing with this. Yeah, not necessarily that they've got it all sorted, but they're practicing with this, they're prioritizing this to a great degree. And so there's a sense of the safety, the respect that is there, and also the possibility. Yeah. Possibility and part of these possibilities is seeing that neutrality and the fact that our experience does not unfold, it doesn't flow just in one direction. You know, the embodiment of sila through us impacts others. They can feel more safe, they can feel more respected. But that flows back to us, because when someone else feels more safe, yeah, they're less likely to pick up harmful ways of acting, speaking. Not always, because there's other conditions in there, of course. Yeah. So it's not like, oh, if, you know, others are, you know, acting in harmful ways towards me, it means that something's wrong with me, with my sila. Not always, not necessarily. You know, there's other forms of conditionality happening. But we can also see the times when that is really clear. Yeah. That the embodiment of sila in ourselves kind of impacts others, and it flows back towards us, yeah, both in the actions of others but also just in our own resilience, yeah, in our own capacity to kind of not be as impacted by the actions of others. Yeah, having a kind of wider base, yeah, and can start to see and how the connection also between sila and equanimity, the wider base on which to rest on, knowing, I'm not, I haven't acted in ways that harm, I haven't acted in ways that are contributing to this, even if what I'm meeting is perhaps injustice or aggression, or I've contributed less. We're aware that we're not perfect, so I've contributed less, but that's kind of really that wide base. I want to give an example of that just from a couple of days ago. I was in Palestine with some friends in the olive grove, and with some also Israeli and international friends accompanying them, because situations getting more and more challenging day to day. This is in the West Bank, not in Gaza, where of course things are also getting challenging more and more day by day, but also in the West Bank, really hard. And at the moment, friends, farmers reporting that every time they go out to their lands, they are meeting the occupation in some way, whether it's soldiers or settlers or drones. Something is there. And so this particular day, 2 days ago, we were in the olive grove, and a drone came and hovered above us, and the farmer that we were working with said, okay, the soldiers will be coming. They've noticed we're here, that means the soldiers will be coming. And then when the soldiers came, both he and I and a couple of others kind of called out to them and then approached them, met them. So it's really interesting, again, the sila here. And I just want to kind of point to that. So the sense of, they're coming. And of course, our sense will be this is an act of aggression, right? They're entering somebody's private land, wearing the uniform and the weapons of aggression. And yet we are calling out to them in greeting. Hello. Non-harming, care, humanity. How can we help you? We're not participating in that sense of aggression. And so the dialogue was then, let's say, I was looking for the word. I was telling another Israeli friend about it yesterday and looking for the word and to describe how the soldiers conducted themselves. And she said to me, oh, they were professional. And I said, oh, yeah, that's become a rare occurrence nowadays to even just meet soldiers who are acting professionally, So they're not showing their emotions, their particular emotions. They're just being professional. And so that's what they were, which was a great relief. They asked us, they checked, we responded. And my friend, his land it is, I've known him for a long time. He's a really beautiful, beautiful, precious human being. And his way, is friendliness, So even in this situation, he's friendly, We had just finished our coffee break when they approached. And the first thing, he said to them was, they said, we can smell coffee. And he said, oh, yeah, we just finished some, but we're happy to make some more for you. That was his kind of sense. And we can see this, this movement, of care, of non-harming, wise speech, right speech, right there. And after, the interaction kind of unfolded, he said to the soldiers, just so you know, so that you don't get kind of concerned, it's almost lunchtime. and my son and a friend will be bringing the food for us. So you'll see a car coming and two people. And I don't want you to be concerned. Yeah. So just so you know, yeah, they're going to be coming. And that was kind of, that's his attitude. You know, it's really beautiful to see. And the soldiers kind of, you know, said, okay, yeah, okay, that's fine. And then he very beautifully said to them, you know, it would make my heart easy if I knew that you were also here to look after me, after my safety. Yeah. It would make my heart easy if I knew that you were here to also look after me, after my safety. And it was such a beautiful moment. Yeah. It was such a beautiful moment. And the kind of the sense of that sila, you know, building. Yeah, and I think it had a real impact, yeah, on their professionalism. Yeah, of like, here's that sense of the clarity. He said to them, before he said this, I forgot. He said, you know, I am the simple farmer. Yeah, all I care about, I'm here to look after my land. I have no wish to harm anybody. Yeah, that embodiment of sila. And it would make my heart easy if I knew that you heard that, and if I knew that you were also here to look after me. Yeah. So he's putting it out there. Yeah. And it doesn't matter to him what comes back. He's just putting it out there. Yeah. With that basis of being able to say that, and with that equanimity, that real strength. Yeah. And meeting this on a daily basis, and this was a positive, like this was a harmless interaction. There've been a lot worse ones that he's experienced in the last weeks. So this was one kind of example that I want to give to us as inspiration, of seeing that kind of power. And a little bit later that same day, you know, his son had come. Actually, three of his sons came with another friend and brought lunch, and we'd had lunch, and we'd finished lunch, and we were back at work. And one of his sons, who's late 20s, and this is, he's kind of under 40, the most dangerous age to be a Palestinian, under 40 man, you know, between, let's say, 12 to 40 is the most dangerous age if you're a Palestinian man. And his son was just about to go. They have a water reservoir where they collect the rainwater. He was just about to go there to connect the pipe on that end so that they could water their vegetable seeds, yeah, amongst their olive trees. And we saw more soldiers. Yeah, and the water tank, they were right by the water reservoir, which is by the road. And he was already on his way. And I called out to him and said, wait for me. I want to come with you, yeah, as you go up. Wait for me. I want to come up. I want to go with you. And I ran as fast as I could, which is not very fast in the olive groves. And by the time I could see the water tank again, he was already up there. He didn't wait for me. And he was talking to the soldiers. Yeah. And as I approached, I could start hearing the conversation. And I feel again, you know, his sense of his own sila, yeah, his clarity of knowing about himself, yeah, that he does not harm, does not wish to harm, yeah, has not harmed, has no intention of harming anybody. Yeah. And have allowed him to just go and engage in that way. And they were having a conversation about water systems and how much it costs to build one. And this kind of, you know, weird conversation in the context they were in. And again, the impact, you know, later they walked down as he started working. And I had a conversation with him, with them, which was actually about the situation. And what was going on, yeah, and kind of what we were doing, what they were doing, yeah, what ways forward are, you know, and all felt on the basis, yeah, of his clarity about his own ethics, morality, non-harming, care, and mine, because I'm also grounded in that situation. Yeah, why am I there? Yeah. commitment to non-harming for everybody, whoever they are, whatever they are. And so seeing these kind of ripples and these foundations, and it's really important for me when I tell these stories to go back to what I said earlier. Now we can have a real sense of sila, a real commitment, a real practice, a real foundation, and that will have an impact on others sometimes, but not necessarily, and not to the degree that we would wish. And so we could still receive harmful speech, harmful actions. That does not mean that our foundation is not something we can trust in. It's still not something that we can work on and continue to cultivate and to develop. It just means there's more conditions than our own practice impacting in any given moment. But there's something, in all these moments of these meetings, I always feel it's like a crack in this ignorance that is impacting people's vision. A crack that can reveal not only the humanity before you, but the potential for us as human beings. And that crack matters. It's so important. So important. And it's what we're practicing for and towards. So in the teachings, there's such a beautiful emphasis on sila, which is, a power that frees our mind from regret. Frees our mind from doubt. Frees our mind from that agitation that regret and doubt bring with them. So a mind imbued with sila is a mind at ease. And it's a mind that opens to possibilities. When I say mind, I mean heart mind. It's open to possibilities. And there's a beautiful sutta in the teachings where the Buddha speaks about sila as the foundation for a mind free from regret, and of a mind free from regret as a foundation for a mind filled with joy. And a mind filled with joy as the foundation. There's quite a few steps. There's like four different types of joy and happiness there. As a foundation for gatheredness, for collectedness, for samadhi. For this clarity and collectedness of mind, which is the foundation for insight, for liberating insight, for the most deep types of insight, and all the way to full awakening. There's a whole 12 links there that lead from sila to liberation. And so remembering that, as I said at the beginning, it's not just, say on retreat, we often speak about the precepts, and it's as if we just talk about them at the opening day or in the teachings. Oh, this is just the opening. It's not, It's all the way to liberation. This is such a significant aspect. A heart mind free from regret. It's a mind at ease. It's full of possibilities. And the possibilities for the deepest well-being and freedom available to us. And a mind and heart committed to sila, practicing sila, not just imbued with it, allow us to do the right thing, moment by moment, to make the right choices. And right, I mean the ones that are onward leading. They support us to be fearless in the face of fear, of sadness, of despair, of pain. Which means, when we speak about this in the teachings, it doesn't mean that we don't feel those things. Sometimes we feel, if I was a good practitioner, I wouldn't feel despair or fear or sadness or blame or anger, any of these. It's not about not feeling them. It's about being able to hold them. It's being able to allow for them to be there without getting swept up in the negative impact they may have. And being in touch with the potential and the possibilities that they allow. Yesterday, after we finished another day of working in the olive groves, one of the young Israelis who had come with us for the first time Yeah, so he spent those 2 days, the first time he'd come with us into Palestine to do this kind of work. He said, today was a day of heartbreak and inspiration. Yeah. Side by side, together. Yeah, heartbreak and inspiration. He said, like, hearing from these Palestinian friends, you know, the heartbreak of the conditions of their lives and inspiration in how they're meeting it. Side by side. And we also can feel his heartbreak and inspiration echoing within us as we hear it. Yeah. An awakened heart mind is caring. It's filled with sila, filled with this beautiful quality that brings forth this balance between compassion and wisdom. Yeah? The confluence, the coming together of compassion and wisdom. For the benefit of all beings. Mm-hmm. The benefit of all beings, including ourselves. So that's what I wished to share today. And thank you for your listening and your presence and your practice. And I'm really happy. I see that someone's already shared a poem in the chat, which we'll look at in a moment. But also, if there's any other questions, reflections about the practice today, about anything I've said or not said, about anything else to do with our practice, that's really welcome. We still have some time. So you can either use the chat if you wish, or you can unmute and ask live if you wish. It's all really welcome. So let's see what's arising. Any questions or reflections? Very, very welcome. Yes, beautiful. What a beautiful question. So I would kind of, you know, without asking Toni Morrison's permission, say, you know, we can say anger sometimes, so I'm going to paraphrase that beautiful quote. Anger can be sometimes an indication of sila. Yeah, especially when we're facing injustice or, as you're saying, dehumanization, and there's a feeling of anger in relationship to that. You know, what are we angry about? We're angry about harm being, being created, yeah? And so we can see, so that it can be a kind of say, what's going on? And to see that, that's what's going on. There is actually that, that is what is underlying, or care. And anger is a really, really interesting emotion. It gets a really, really bad rap. I mean, some of you have heard me say this in all spiritual traditions and also in many aspects of psychology. I would say particularly in Buddha Dharma, there was a mistranslation where often, greed, hatred, delusion, the hatred bit has been translated as anger. And so it's kind of fueled that. But anger has many, many aspects, many faces, many elements within it, and it's not always a harmful emotion. Yeah, and again, we can, you know, if we think about things like grief, say, we know anger, you know, now we know psychologically, anger is part of the grief, of a healthy grief process. It's something that goes through it. So if we see it in that context, okay, that comes through. And it's also about how anger is acted out, but it's also what it's made up of, and having that discernment. Or again, as I say, if we think about anger in the face of injustice, yeah, what is that actually saying? And then where is it leading? Yeah, so what's that anger of, like, kind of this outrage, we could say sometimes is another word. Yeah, I'm outraged in the face of injustice, but that is like, it's giving, you know, you can see how it impacts the body. It gives me energy. Yeah, to act, yeah, And then it's the how I act is where the sila will come back in and say, yeah, sometimes, you know, in a situation where we could say an act of seeming violence is going to save lives, maybe that's the right thing. Yeah, I push someone over because they're about to kind of really harm someone else. You know, that may be the right thing to do. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm really opening this up. Yeah, it's complex territory, but certainly the standing up, the being assertive, you know, that, you know, and letting that fuel. And the interesting thing for us as practitioners is first of all to see it as a territory of practice rather than just, oh, if there's anger, then that's just wrong and I just need to suppress it, limit it, dampen it, you know, not allow it. If we've had interactions with angry people, you know, sometimes, you know, whether they're 2-year-olds or 15-year-olds or 50-year-olds, it doesn't matter. Sometimes there's something there underneath the anger or with the anger, which is actually, you know, a message that needs to be heard. So, you know, to just kind of sometimes we want to hear that and kind of try and understand what's there. And for us, when we're moved by that, getting to know, understanding what are the threads in this, what's underneath, what's the message also, and then how does that anger then inform action, including speech? Yeah? And that's the practice area. That's where the sila comes in. Can I stand up for something and even, you know, say argue with someone? Yeah, which I also had on Friday, but I won't go into that story. I can be arguing with a soldier, yeah, you know, which again said happened on Friday, but I'm doing it without enmity. He's not my enemy. I don't hate him. Yeah, I can see him as a human being, but I'm standing up for something. You know, he's telling me something and it's wrong, you know. Yeah, and so I'm saying to him, no, that's wrong. That's not, I can just say in a nutshell, he's telling me you can't go into the village because they'll kill you, yeah? And I'm saying to him, no, they won't, you know? That's not going to happen, you know? That's just not going to happen, you know? I'm not in danger here. He's saying, you're in danger here. I'm not in danger here, you know? So that's a kind of, you know, and there's no anger in that case because, you know, but I could also be angry because they're limiting my possibility to go visit my friends who've, you know, cooked a meal for me and are waiting. So I could be also angry in that moment. But what I would put out is not the hatred and the anger, but the, you know, the energy. Yeah. In this case, I didn't, it didn't anger me. I was able to just really be clear. Yeah. But another time it might. But we can still argue. Yeah. We can still stand up. Yeah. For our point, we can still say to someone if the situation in the olive groves had gone a different way, you know, and the soldiers had told us we needed to leave, I could still say to them, this is not okay, yeah, and I need you to hear that. This is not okay that you're using your power to do this, yeah. And actually, I also did in this situation. It was like, no, this is their land, you can say that. But the thing with practice for us as a practice and the way the sila comes in is how. And not just the how of it's expressed, but the how of the energy that we come with. The non-hatred, the non-enmity. And it's a huge area of practice and we'll fail countless times in doing it. But it's our practice. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for that question. It's really, really important, and the whole area of anger, sila, practice, you know, is really, I think we can start to see what a rich territory it is, and how important it is that we actually practice with it. You know, sometimes it's easier for us not to go to these edges, yeah, not to go to where we're angry, not to go, you know, to just say, oh, I'm just not gonna go there. But then life will come and just put it in our face. And so, you know, it's much better that we practice, you know, when we have the opportunities, so that when, you know, difficult things happen on any level, you know, whether it's our own health or someone else's health that's close to us, whether it's what's happening in the world, that we're doing our practice, that it doesn't blindside us. Yeah, not to be afraid of the human condition as it appears in us, and seeing it all as a practice. All teachings are practices. Yeah? Really, really important to remember. Yeah, they're not measurements to measure ourselves up against. You know, I've got it, I haven't got it. I'm good enough, I'm not good enough. Yeah? The areas of practice. Yes, Tilly, please. Thank you, Tilly. Yeah, really beautiful phrasing. And kind of, I feel also you've taken it kind of more deep. So really, yeah, very, very beautiful. That sense of, yeah, and when you were speaking, it just came to me, you know, sometimes we talk about three parts of a practice, you know, intention, application, reflection. And like with Sila, that's really, you know, we can see it, yeah, the intention to not to harm, the application, yeah, with whatever the conditions are that are coming up, and then the reflection. So it's an ongoing exploration, and yeah, and that applies to all the teachings, yeah, to all the teachings. But yeah, this one is, yeah, a big one, and one that will take us all the way, right, to where we're heading. So yeah, thank you everyone. Thank you for your presence, your practice, your listening, the questions and reflections, all of it. And go well. I will see you in a few weeks. I can't remember when, but I know it's coming. Take care. Go well, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.